What's going on when an undercover investigator finds bombshell evidence of the biggest crime ever committed against humanity, but then finds that the very agency he was working for undercover may have itself been compromised because they tried to bury his story? Well, the man who blew the whistle on both Pfizer and Project Veritas is here to tell the story. This is the Dr. Jane Ruby Show, and you're about to enter some pretty heavy-duty truth in medicine. Hi, everyone. As a preempt to tonight's show, I want to give you a heads up that this show will be split into a part one and a part two with whistleblower, Pfizer and Project Veritas whistleblower, Justin Leslie. The interview went longer. There was so much more information than I anticipated, and I thought it would be best to divide it up into two shows. So here we go for part one of Justin Leslie's interview.
Hi, my name is Justin Leslie, and I was a Pfizer whistleblower and was an inside agent for Project Veritas and O'Keefe Media Group, both started by James O'Keefe. When I started on this long journey several years ago, I had no idea what I was getting into, what I was going to uncover, and what I would come to find.
I went to this bohemian club and it's upset people. So I just wanted to hear from you and kind of take your temperature and see how you're feeling, see how you're doing, like what's going through your mind.
James, I mean, how did you even get invited there? And like, it's the most powerful secret society in the world.
As it turns out, what I found out turned my whole world completely upside down. And I'd like to share it with you. This is my story, Project Whistleblower.
Good evening. Well, that narrator you just heard was a young undercover investigative journalist who ended up blowing the whistle on the whistleblowers. And he's here tonight to tell you the story of crime, dirty deals, and corruption. Welcome to the Dr. Jane Ruby Show on this Wednesday, April 10th, 2024. Remember the undercover video put out by James O'Keefe and Project Veritas about Jordan Walker, the Pfizer scientist who said that Pfizer was redirecting evolution by mutating the COVID virus directly in the company? When he was on a date with what would become known as a Project Veritas undercover agent? Well, the undercover agent behind that camera is Justin Leslie, a whistleblower who worked inside of Pfizer and then overlapped that time by working undercover for Project Veritas. But who were the good guys and who were the bad guys? Well, it's not so clear as we thought. I've warned all of you many times, this is very thick. We're going to dig into this a little bit deeper tonight so that you can see how layered and how convoluted it all is. And I'd like to welcome Justin Leslie to the show now. Justin, thanks so much for being with me tonight.
Dr. Jane, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to have a chat with you and go over what Project Whistleblower tells. And, you know, I'm curious what you're curious about and what your audience is able to learn from my human experience throughout, you know, all these different hats that I've worn through the years.
Yeah, I think people will find it fascinating. And I've been looking forward to speaking with you because we are both pharma insiders and we both know a lot of the players from the industry. So I'm very grateful that you're here. And I think it'll be very enlightening. So Justin, a lot of people understand from the films, they saw the Jordan Walker tape and all that. We'll talk about that more later. We're not going to rush through this. But I wanted to get a little bit of a timeline set so people understand. You became a Pfizer contractor. Give me the timelines. I think it was March of 2021, and you were there about a year.
A little over a year, yes. So I took the role. I was offered the job, I think, late February 2021 or early March, and I started right around mid-March of 2021. So for
for everyone, you know, that wants to time it with the way the vaccines were being rolled
Sure.
out. The vaccines were already going into people's arms, you know, so most a lot of people that were lining up and wanted to get jabbed, they were already basically double jabbed.
Yeah.
And then I worked at Pfizer for 1 year and 1 month. I resigned in early to mid-April. I think it was April 12th was my resignation date. And so that
Okay.
was my
Yeah. Let
timeline.
me ask you this. How did you get the job? And I mean, it's kind of like a little bit of a miracle that you got a job with Pfizer. You know, you have to go through a series of interviews and all that. How did you I know you said it was divine intervention, but still, how did you contact them? Did you use a recruiter?
So I was contacted by a recruiter from Mindlance Inc., which is a consulting agency that helps with hiring for pharmaceutical companies. So, what happened for me was I was in a master's program actually at Rutgers for Masters of Biomedical Sciences.
Hmm.
So, you know, I was getting Zoom University education in through that entire first semester of it was essentially an M1 program simulation of medical school.
I
So
see.
I was honestly miserable because I was really waking up to all of the corruption of allopathic medicine and just the corruption of pharmaceuticals, et cetera, right? And everyone's on their own journey, but that's where my awakening was happening, literally in a master's program, looking to
Interesting.
get
Yeah.
to the root cause of disease. So after the first semester, I said, hey, I want to apply to jobs and just do this part time while I really figure out what I want to do in the world, and use my undergraduate education as well, you know, because I wasn't working, you know. So
Sure.
I applied to like four pharmaceutical companies. I don't need to list all of them, but Pfizer gave me two interviews and then offered me the job, and they were the only one to offer me a job. And I was pretty shocked, and I really didn't want to work there, but you know, it just led to me accepting the job as them being the only ones to offer me a role. And you know, the rest is history at this point. You know, if I
Yeah,
didn't take the job, then it's
and when you went there, you were probably curious, like, what's this company up to? But when you went there, you were hired as a formulation analytical scientist. And I want people to remember that title because formulations, and I want to ask you some questions based on other connections that I've made and I'm curious about. But when you went there, when you first started, were you aware that Pfizer, did you know they were kind of dirty? Did you know that there was something bad about the shot? So you must answer, I mean, tell me that because,
I'm
yeah,
absolutely.
you did.
So
Wow.
I didn't literally take the job to be like 100% I'm gonna blow the whistle, but I took the job because I knew that Pfizer had the highest criminal complaint or highest criminal lawsuit ever,
Oh, yeah, and
you know.
violations, I agree. In the industry,
So
right.
billions of dollars. And so, you know, essentially, I just wanted to go see what was happening for myself as well and learn and educate myself from the inside and then see if there was going to be a way that I could help people learn from a Pfizer scientist directly, you know. And it wasn't going to happen overnight. It wasn't going to happen right away. I was going to have the role for a certain period of time to gain the credibility as a Pfizer scientist. And you know, so being there
Yeah.
for over a year, I have gained that credibility.
Let me ask you this. I'm sure you'll agree with me. Pfizer is the largest pharmaceutical company in the world by any metrics, number of d drugs, number of employees, number of locations, blah, blah, blah. They're very powerful. They're very wealthy. I'm sure you know that globally. Were you afraid at any point that this company, you would just, stumble down the street one night and accidentally bump into a 9 millimeter bullet or something. I mean, these companies, they got a lot at stake. Were you ever afraid to go into the beast and do this?
I mean, I called it the Viper Pit, and yeah, I mean, I really was doing a lot of this afraid, but just overcoming fear is something that I had to, you know, overlook the fear and understand that this is not even about me. This is about helping this generation and then future generations learn from the mistakes of the previous generations of, how Big Pharma literally runs the media and controls everything, and it's just one big spider web of corruption that has grown, so I felt I had to empower myself to overcome that fear and get to the truth.
And yeah, there's a lot of bravery in your story, which is what caught my eye when I saw your documentary, which is what we opened the show with. So I really encourage everyone to go to your Twitter, which is just integrity, a little play on words. Twitter, just integrity. And you'll see links, you'll get links to the documentary. It's in two parts. I couldn't take my eyes off of it on Sunday when somebody sent it to me. So let's take a I wanted to go into how you got connected then, because we're kind of still doing the timeline. How you got connected to Project Veritas. Not an easy organization to get into. I've friends with some very famous alumni like Laura Loomer, Ann Vandersteel, know the history of it. Did you realize, hey, wow, I'm in the belly of the beast. This is worse than I thought. I got to let these people know what I'm finding out. And then you reached out to Project Veritas. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but is that how the timeline went to get into PV?
In a way. So I actually was offered the role by Pfizer, and I had reached out the same day that I got offered the job. I was telling Project Veritas, hey, by the way, I actually got this job offer from Pfizer. I know that it's kind of dark what's happening on the in there, or at least I feel like it's dark, and this is contextually what I said, not word for
Sure,
word.
sure.
But and they
Paraphrased,
said,
but.
Justin, that's awesome, but we can't tell you what to do by any means. But if you do take the job and you find anything that's newsworthy, please reach back out to us,
Okay.
And so I took that and said, okay, they can't tell me what to do. But I just said, okay, it's up to me to make this decision, and I'm gonna make the decision to insert myself and go learn on the inside. And so connecting with them, I reached back out to them, and I believe it was late August.
Okay.
And I spoke to a journalist over the phone. They really did nothing with what I had to say. It was just they were asking some pretty basic questions, and they didn't want to work with me then. And then early September of 2021 and then late September of 2021 are the times that I reached back out again. And then they finally wanted to work with me in late September, which is where they proceed to give me a contributor agreement, and we worked together, and they gave me the recording equipment,
Had you
the
done
phone.
anything yet? Had you recorded anybody? Now I'm going to talk about some of the people you did share in your documentary, but okay, you hadn't done anything yet, so you didn't have something and say, hey guys, I got this, hire me. You just said, hey, I'm really inside now and there are these possibilities. Okay, so you did go through some training with them in the agreement or no? Some like.
You could call it training, or you could call it advice, or I mean, it's not necessarily either of those things. I was working with a team of journalists, though, and they did their best to dance around training me in the sense of saying, oh, if I were you, I would do this.
Okay.
If I were you, I would ask this. If I were you, I would, maybe do et cetera. They weren't telling me what to do. They were saying, if I were you, I would do this sort of thing.
The reason I.
Looks like you've been sleeping well.
Megan, he's back. The My Pillow guy.
And you're looking good.
Still feeling good.
Well, just when you thought it couldn't get any better, we've got the best pillow ever, My Pillow 2.0. When I invented My Pillow, it had everything you'd ever want in a pillow. Well, now there's new technology that makes it even better. My Pillow 2.0 has my patented fill combined with a cooling fabric with temperature regulating thread. My Pillow 2.0 is truly the next generation of My Pillow.
Now's the time to go to mypillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use the promo code to save 50% on your My Pillow 2.0.
You're sleeping even better.
And cooler, too.
And you're looking good.
Feeling good.
I knew you would.
mypillow.com.
Hi everyone, Dr. Jane Ruby here with a quick message on how you should be protecting your retirement funds, your 401k, your IRAs. Did you know that you can protect them with physical gold and silver to avoid losing everything that you've built over your lifetime? Please call the experts at Augusta Precious Metals at 888-836-1890. At least talk to an expert. Learn more about how you can protect what you've built up so that if things go crazy, as we know they will in this economy, you've got some of your investments protected with tangible physical gold and silver. Every bit as valuable as real estate, something you can touch. They can't turn off, you know, with a flick of a switch. Call the people at Augusta Precious Metals. They're wonderful. They will educate you on what this is all about and what you need to do. And they will also provide you with some warnings about how to protect yourself from other companies that may be spreading lies and scamming you. That's Augusta Precious Metals at 888-836-1890. You know, the reason I'm asking is because I found it fascinating throughout your documentary and in some of the recent interviews you've done that they said the reason they gave you for blocking your story, and we're going to, I want you to be able to tell us all about that as well, because that's very telling. But the reason, or one of the major reasons, was, well, Justin, you know, you had something to do with crossing over state lines, or maybe the phone calls were in, you were situated in a state where you didn't have, you know, one party knowledge and you had to have two party knowledge. Because that's why I ask about training you. Didn't they kind of warn you ahead of time, like, look, if you gather evidence for us, make sure you do it this way and this way and this way. That didn't happen?
That didn't happen
wow.
Whatsoever.
It's pretty loosey-goosey over there.
I had no idea what recording consent law was until they basically told me, we're not going to tell your story. And I said, what do you mean? Like, this is, I'm exposing crimes. You know, this is
right.
Absurd to not tell the world about what I'm seeing. And so, you know, I obviously learned a lot in a short period of time once they were telling me about recording consent law. Mm-hmm. And I was conscious to the crossing over state lines issues, where I actually wanted to keep it from crossing state lines with what we did with Carrie Madej. But they flew Carrie into New York, and their headquarters was.
Who did? Who's they?
Project Veritas flew Carrie Madej.
So Carrie Madej was working with Project Veritas?
Yeah, not, she wasn't getting paid or anything, but she was a source that
okay.
was there. In the film, she ends up going on Stu Peters' show.
Yep,
after
I was there then.
The entire trial situation.
There was something, were you in the room when she did these microscopy things? Okay, because there must have been two, was it in someone's home? You don't have to tell me names. Was it in a home? Okay. Because
no,
I think there were two or more incidences. I'm just going to full disclosure because I had a witness come to me a couple of years ago when this was going on, who was also a physician, who was in a private home in the room when and stated that Madej looked at the a Pfizer vial, and it was an unconfirmed chain of custody because it was already open. But I don't want to get into that because that's not why we're here. But I'm just concerned about information around that time because I'm trying to figure out who were the operatives and who were not. So bear with me on that. So Justin, what I'm getting at is in terms of them training you and then stonewalling you with saying, well, I'm sorry, we can't put your story out, this bombshell story, because you didn't do it the right way or you didn't. There might be a legal thing. I'm assuming you recorded the Jordan Walker interview at that restaurant table with your phone.
There was undercover recording equipment, and yeah, I had a burner phone for like backup audio.
Okay. So you still had your own material because you physically acquired it, right? I'm just thinking.
Well, so I was working at Project Veritas as an undercover journalist at the time. I was not connected to Pfizer at all.
Okay, but what I'm getting at is, didn't you keep a copy, or did you keep a copy of what you recorded with Jordan? Because when they said, hey, Justin, we're not going to do your story, you still had the material, right? I mean, I know you're not Project Veritas, but you did not.
No, I was naive, and I gave them everything way too trustworthy. I said, here you go. Like, this is everything I have. Like, this is crimes against humanity.
But I'm going to tell you
his golden ticket.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you why I'm asking, because you might know the history, but James O'Keefe kind of trained under Andrew Breitbart when he busted open the Acorn scandal, right? And they had backups to backups, and they had people. So I find it really fascinating that they didn't allow you, or that you didn't. I understand you were young, you're still young, but this was the first time out. But yeah, always keep your own copies and put them in multiple places. So we all learn as we go. So not beating you up for it.
And so, Jane, that was one of the reasons why I was offered a job as an undercover journalist my first time I met James O'Keefe. He basically was saying, oh, we feel like you can help us. You're really good at undercover work. You basically have a spot here whenever you leave Pfizer, essentially, is what was basically put on the table. And, you know, it was actually a breach of the contributor agreement. They weren't allowed to, like, make any employment exchanges with a whistleblower, especially with what the magnitude of what I was exposing.
Right.
So, but the power of suggestion is real. And, you know, I was vulnerable. They knew that I didn't want to work at Pfizer anymore. They knew I essentially said I have blood on my hands from working on these vaccines.
Project Veritas people told you that?
And told me what exactly?
That you had blood on your hands by staying?
No, I said that myself.
Oh, you were starting to feel like it. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, because just by association of what I was doing, you know, I felt called to be a whistleblower at this point when I was paying attention to, I mean, the information that you were talking about back in 2021 with talk about blood clots, talk about neurological issues, death, etc. You know, that I was paying attention.
Yeah, you were watching everything. All the pieces. Let me clarify something if I could, and I'm sorry to take your interview to do it, but I think it's important because I saw in a recent interview that you did, I won't name names or anything, there's nothing bad about it, but I wanted to clarify something because there's a lot of confusion. First of all, the embalmer clot story, I broke the worldwide story. Nobody else had it. In January of 22, when Teresa Long, Lieutenant Colonel Dr. Teresa Long, one of the DMED whistleblowers, came to me privately and connected me with Richard Hirschman. They're not blood. They're not blood clots. We tried to get Ryan Cole, some other people to do an analysis. They sat on it. I pulled in Mike Adams. He's got an ISO national certified lab. He was gracious enough to do it. He did chemical analysis, spectroscopy. He found they were the furthest thing from human blood. They're white fibrous clots. They're made out of metals, very rare radioactive metals. Nobody followed up on this. So I feel your pain about something not getting out. And then we have stories coming out. I mean, why don't people connect the dots? Why aren't people like, I'm not pointing fingers, but people like Melissa, other people tying together Jordan or Justin Leslie, Jane Ruby. Instead, it gets all convoluted. And you know, the Died Suddenly story was based on my discovery and my breaking the story and was left out. So it's not ego, it's big suspicion that people had been bought off along the way, Justin. And this is what I want you to be very careful of. So I want to ask you a question. Do you think that Project Veritas is not what we used to think it was? Do you think they're compromised? And do you think James has been captured?
I certainly think that there's possibility, even that they've always been some sort of compromised 501c3 that is really under the guise of, you know, like, was the board handpicked? Was James handpicked? Was, you know, the reason Hannah Giles followed up James as CEO, like, was she handpicked?
That was interesting. Yes.
You know, I'm raising questions. I'm not affirming anything necessarily, but to have your motto, be brave, do something, you know, and then you have a young 23-year-old whistleblower from Pfizer come to you wanting to help the world and expose crimes against humanity, and felt that was the only trustworthy news organization at the time that I felt was worth reaching out to. I mean, I was 23 years old. I had no idea what I was doing other than I need to help people.
What do you think now? With everything you've known and everything you've been through and how they treated you, what do you think now? Is Project Veritas captured?
It certainly feels like it in a way. With that, and then, I mean, just getting to James going to Bohemian Grove last year, summer of 2020.
Tell us that story. That was very strange. Let's talk about that. How did you find out? And why was everybody okay with James O'Keefe being invited and going to Bohemian Grove, which for the audience's sake is a kind of the underground of the underground? I mean, people call it the cabal. This is where people go to get compromised, right? I did an interview with Dershowitz about 5 years ago when I was in D.C., and we talked about Bohemian Grove and how they sometimes use it, although, you know, it's a whole other long story about him and Epstein Island. But the point is, so why would anybody say, hey, it's okay, I went there, don't worry? Tell us about how you learned it and what that was about with your conversation with James.
So I was actually at O'Keefe Media Group at this point in time. I had resigned from Project Veritas. I went to O'Keefe Media Group and I worked at O'Keefe Media Group for about 5 or 6 months. And I discovered Bohemian Grove and James being invited there in early July with some old colleagues resigning around the same time. And I was informed, hey, James is invited to go to the Bohemian Grove. And so myself and my journalist colleagues, I essentially informed the journalists that were above me, that were like producer level roles and editorial roles. And I told them, I essentially figured out that James was going to Bohemian Grove. And
wow. Weren't you afraid to tell them you know, that you knew that, or that, I mean, you.
I was a little afraid, but I mean, I was scared that our boss was going to Bohemian Grove. And so we essentially teamed together and said, let's see if James goes on his own, you know, versus just telling him, hey, we know you're going to, you know, this Bohemian Club and we don't want you to go. We wanted to see if he would go organically, if he would come back and say, hey guys, I went to the Bohemian Grove actually to investigate it. But that's not how it played out. And so after he went is where I corroborated the tent slip.
How did you know he went? How did you know he went at that point?
The week after he went, well, I mean, there were so many hints. I mean, we knew
in the office.
What do you mean?
In the Project Veritas office that you were working, how did you know he actually went?
No, I was at Media Group.
Okay.
I was at Media Group at this time.
Oh, okay. So, okay, sorry. Same thing, but how did you know he actually went?
He was sort of hinting. I mean, I took the context clues. He was saying that he was going away for a week during the exact timing of the encampment.
Okay.
The 20th through the 27th is the second week that it all takes place. And then right after he got back, or right after he left the Bohemian Grove, I corroborated that there was a tent slip. It's this red tent slip right in the beginning of the documentary. It says Bohemian Grove right at the top. It has the camp. It says Ty Binders, which is actually a camp. If you look up what Ty Binders is, Bohemian Grove, even on Google, probably it'll show up. And so that's a camp there. It said Mr. James O'Keefe.
Okay.
And I corroborated that happened the following week, August 1st of 2023 is when I found that tent slip.
Okay.
And then James admitted it to me.
He did admit it. He did admit it.
Which was my resignation call. You know,
I see.
He asked, do you trust me since I went to Bohemian Grove? And I said, no, absolutely not. Especially considering how I was a Pfizer whistleblower and you silenced my story and we could have saved millions of people. But
okay, hold up there for a minute. I think I asked the question wrong before. Do you think O'Keefe, forget Project Veritas for a minute, because you worked for O'Keefe Media, but at that point or any point and now today, do you feel O'Keefe Media is a captured version of maybe what PV used to be? Do you think they're compromised? You do. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I just wanted to hear your opinion.
I feel that James, you know, he probably has to filter out he has to filter himself in some way, shape or form. And I mean, to elaborate on this, I mean, there are connections that can be made to Eric Prince, who was the creator, founder of Blackwater. And I've been told from actual former PV colleagues that Eric Prince was training Project Veritas operatives and teaching us on, or not us, because I wasn't there at the point in time, how to be a spy. He was recruiting ex-spies, at PS operatives, and infiltrate elections and things of that nature. And they were treating Project Veritas, and then now O'Keefe Media Group, which the business model of O'Keefe Media Group is a little bit different now because they're doing a citizen journalist business model, but it's almost like, not, I don't know if espionage is the right word, but turning Project Veritas into an intelligence, like private intelligence. I see.
This is where you think it might, where that might be where the capture is. Without getting too much into those weeds, we're going to take a short break, Justin, but I want to ask you a question based on all of this, because you seem like an intuitive and a visceral person, which is good gut reaction, things like that. Has there been any time during this whole thing that you've ever wondered or felt if for some reason you were played, that you were picked, that you just so happened to get this job at Pfizer, that you just happened to get into, O'Keefe Media Project, whatever it is? Have you ever felt like, wait a minute, are they actually playing me and putting this stuff in front of me? Like the Jordan Walker interview? Yeah, go do the Jordan Walker. Tell me about that before we go to break. Take a couple of minutes and what you think.
Yeah,
about.
I mean, being a critical thinker, I don't jump to any conclusions. So I'm going to agree with you that it feels that it's at least a possibility, Jane. I'm not going to say that Jordan Walker himself is a plant, but the way things played out with meeting Jordan Walker, the door is open for that. Maybe Jordan Walker was called on the phone. Oh, make sure you tell Justin that, Pfizer's mutating COVID on the first meeting, something like that.
Right.
And just the backstory on how I met Jordan was, it was a bit strange, or at least interesting. And the insight is, one of my colleagues who was an intern at Project Veritas at the time, he matched with Jordan, and Jordan's role literally says Pfizer director right on Bumble.com. So he matched with him and then sent him to my burner phone so that I can match with him. So it's not like I was able to find Jordan with my swiping ability.
I see.
It was this other guy.
So you didn't know Jordan at Pfizer or were working with him in different departments. Very interesting. And he wasn't suspicious that you were going to go on this, date with him, and you both worked at Pfizer? Okay.
No, my I had an alias.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. Okay, smart.
He had
smart.
No idea of Pfizer.
Okay,
we got. I said I was some biomedical sales rep at some alias.
Some
company.
Other company. Okay, good thinking. Yeah. Good thinking, Jordan. We're gonna take a quick break, and we'll be back. We're gonna get into the whole thing about what you saw at Pfizer. I've got some pharmaceutical expert to pharmaceutical expert questions for you. So, guys, don't hesitate to come back. We'll be back in a moment with Justin Leslie, the whistleblower who blew in the whistleblowers. Be right back. Wow.